Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence on FNX. I'm your host, Del, and I've got three co-hosts with me this evening. First of all the way from Tottenham is Yanakis. How are you doing, mate?
Not too bad.
Okay? Oh, you've got a smile on your face this week. Brilliant.
Yeah, makes it strange, doesn't it?
Yeah, miserable sod. Anyway, my next co-host, as ever, is Mr. Rodri Giggs with his PG Tips mug in his hand. How you doing, bud?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Had a nice weekend in Wales. Back to the grind now, but I'm good.
Excellent. Glad to have you both back. Now, our third co-host, or my third co-host, is a gentleman known as nothing. He's a legend. He's an absolute legend. He's a good friend of the show. It's his second appearance. It's Steve Morrison. Welcome back, buddy.
Cheers. Good to have you. Good to be here.
Great to have you back on, mate. Great to have you back on. I forgot to ask you before we started the show, how many goals you got this season?
I got three, mate.
Have you got?
I'm having a torrid in front of goal.
have you scored since you were back on the show? The first time.
Yeah, must have done. I scored the other week against Sheffield Wednesday.
Oh, thank goodness.
Now I've setting up more goals than I've scored this year, but I'm still playing. That's all that matters.
Well, I was getting worried. I was thinking the show is a bit of a jinx, but then again, Millwall have actually stepped up since you've been on, isn't it? So it works both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't believe in all that malarkey anyway. You make your own luck in this game.
Okay, well, I'm glad you've taken the flak off us. That's all right. I didn't want Theo Pafitis calling us up and having a go, you know. Right, let's get right down to it, shall we? Now, 200 odd teams, if not more, are down to four in the FA Cup as Peter Cech and Gianfranco Zola drew an intriguing semi-final, although the presenter thought it was Chelsea against Man United for some reason, even though they really drew Chelsea Southampton. But let's not go into that, because then we'll be in a bit of trouble. Spurs won't be marching to Wembley. In fact, they'll be getting out of bed, seeing as they've called the home of English football home, so to speak. A 3-0 win over Swansea was easier than what it should have been. Now, their opponents, Manchester United, didn't bounce back from their Champions League exit. It was actually like a huff and puff performance against Brighton, who actually made a few changes, notably leaving Glenn Murray on the bench. Now, Rod, Christian Eriksen bagged a brace. That's happens to be his 7th and 8th goals in 10 games against Swansea. Now, if Coutinho is worth more than £100 million, how much is this guy worth? He's outstanding, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just not this season. He's done it as well. He's done it for a number of seasons now. They've got a few of these now, Tottenham, that'll assist that and score goals. Probably been with Scott. We'd be a big help with Gary Kane being injured. But yeah, he's a class player. And yeah, he'd definitely three figures up in the millions if he was up for sale. But I'm sure for a long time to come, yeah.
They've qualified for the World Cup, Denmark, haven't they? So if he has a good tournament, then surely you're going to get the usual suspects sniffing about. I'll take it, that's a yes. Okay. Steve, do Spurs need to win the FA Cup or another trophy for that matter for Pochettino to deserve the world-class coach tag, or is this like he's just good anyway, regardless of what he wins or not?
Yeah, I think it's more than just Pochettino. I think it's the club in general need to win something, and they need to end that. I think this term world class gets thrown around too loosely. At the end of the day, he's gone to Spurs off the back of being at Southampton. He's done a very, very good job. But all he's done at the minute is produced a team that nearly wins things. So obviously he needs to start winning. The team needs to start winning things, and then obviously you can start being put up there with the same coaches that have won lots and lots of trophies, because that's what we're all judged on at the end of the day. And yeah, he's been doing very, very well at Spurs. He's done a very, very good job. But obviously winning the league or a cup, I think cup first, then the league is a steps he needs to take before he can start being put on the same pedestal as some of the big boys.
Mm. Now, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, mate, but do you think Spurs are his level? Could he do it at a bigger club?
Yeah, course he can. Of course he can. I think you look at Zidane at Real Madrid. He's gone there with no experience really, and done really well. I think when you get these top teams, it's maybe a little bit easier than it is at Tottenham, because at Tottenham there's expectation from the fans, but not really massive expectations from everyone else. You go to a Real Madrid, you go to a Barcelona, all of a sudden you're expected to win things, and I think it's a different kind of coaching, a different kind of mentality straight away. So I think he'd find it easier if he had to go to one of the big boys, because obviously a lot more is in place. You don't have to build as much. You just kind of have to add and put your own stamp on it. And I think you can find it as you watch a lot of managers, they go to these big teams and win things straight away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Jan, moving on to a head coach who is a bit of a trophy collector. Jose selected a pretty attack-minded team. Can you explain why United looked flat and devoid of ideas in the final third?
What's happened is, in football, as you know, results can change like the mood or the attitude of a club. I mean, United, before the Sevilla game, beat Chelsea, beat Liverpool, and they were a bit on a high. And then going out to Seville just looks like it's kind of dampened the whole mood at the camp. United played with a lack of confidence. They played with fear. The performance was another abysmal performance for me. It was dreadful. I mean, two shots on target again against Brighton. It just seems to be the story of the season, especially the latter part of the season now, where United are not creating chances, they're not playing well, huffing and puffing and just about getting the results.
That's a fair point. Now, Steve, if you think about Mourinho's post-match comments, he didn't deflect much attention from his performers. In fact, he threw a lot of the underperformers under the bus. Now, he's taken a lot of stick for his comments. And as a pro footballer yourself playing at a high level, do you think his post-match interview has, I don't know, burned bridges with players? Is it about time managers stood up for themselves?
I think it's a difficult one. As a player, you know when you haven't done well, you know when you haven't performed. I agree with what some of the pundits have said over the weekend, that sometimes it has to be kept within the four walls of the dressing room. Look, I think he's trying to make a point to a few people. His frustration is coming out in his interviews, and it's tough, but two ways of looking at it. There's the way that, yeah, he should keep it behind closed doors and he shouldn't be saying it, and then the other side of it is maybe he's fed up of saying it in the four walls and not getting any response from it, so now he's thinking, you know what, I'm going to let the public know how I feel. So if anyone wants to question what I'm doing, they know exactly what I'm doing. It's out there for everyone to see. So, but they've invested heavily in the summer, and some of those people they've invested heavily in have not responded in my eyes. And yes, they're second, and in other seasons they maybe would be right up there, one or two points behind the leaders, or even lead the Premier League themselves. But this season it just seems to be one good game, one bad game, and it's just not consistent enough for, I suppose, the biggest team in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
So, can I just add to that, if I may?
Yeah, go on.
It just seems it's a pattern with Mourinho. He did at Real Madrid with Ramos, Casillas, you know, falling out with the big players there. He did it at Chelsea, notably, where he lost the dressing room. It seems that it's going to happen again at United. That's the way that I see it. There's a lot of, like, rumours with, you know, falling out with Martial, Luke Shaw. It seems now the unrest is starting to come out a lot more, and then you can see from his interviews that he's very agitated, he's very angry. I don't know if it's you know, like I said, like a pattern of his previous clubs, but I don't see him at United that long. Maybe next year, possibly, and that would be it if it lasts that long.
Well, you say that, but you know, my take on the whole situation is that at Real Madrid and Chelsea, he was having to deal with a lot of big personalities, a lot of people that had been at the club for a long time that could basically do whatever they wanted. Whereas at United, he's slowly been breaking up the cliques. He's got rid of Rooney, Carrick's going at the end of the season, Schweinsteiger's gone, someone like Memphis Depay, that was a negative influence, is gone. He's fallen out with Pogba, which is obvious. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that. you know, but he's slowly, slowly getting rid of the players that he doesn't want. And the way I see it is that it's been a long time coming that a United manager comes in and gets rid of players that aren't pulling their weight. You know, as I said many a time, no team has a divine right to win trophies, regardless of their size and their stature. You know, the players need to put in the work, as does a manager. Now, if they're not singing from the same hymn sheet, then there's problems. What Mourinho is doing, he's basically fine-tuning everyone the best that he possibly can. You know, you know me. I will stick up for him because I've said for years that United squad have been average since United won since they won the league last time with Van Persie. That was an average squad. But, you know, it's just me going over things that we've gone through before. But let's talk about Chris Hughton and Brighton, Rod. I mean, his side looked really dangerous to the counter, and I think they were quite unlucky not to score at least once, man. I mean, it isn't a surprise. They're actually above a lot of established Premier League teams, isn't it?
Yeah, well, talks about this season, I presume. He's a very, very, very good coach and a very astute coach. So, Brighton are tails up at the minute, but they're having good results. It's a bit surprised Murray didn't start, but he's obviously given the lads a big lot of them in getting the game a run out. And, you know, they did very well, but, you know, United didn't play very well, but, you know, they got the win in the end. But, yeah, we've talked about it all season, I presume. He's a very good coach, and Brian have got the tails at the minute and doing very well, despite getting beat.
Yeah, we're in the Chris Hughton fan club. We're members 6, 7, and 8. gents, what kind of game do you expect to see from the semi-final then between United and Spurs? I mean, I'd have thought United won't start so bad like they did last time at Wembley. What do you reckon, Jan?
I think it's unfair that Tottenham are playing at home.
Oh, don't start. It's nonsense.
I'm only joking. Well, we know what United's approach is going to be. It's going to be, well, hopefully now he'll get his tactics right, because I think in the league game he didn't get his tactics right at all. So I think he'll sit deep and hopefully hit Tottenham on the counter-attack with the pace we've got up front. I see Tottenham having most of the possession, most of the ball. It'll be interesting to see if Kane's out by the time the semi-final comes about. But I expect United to put a better performance, and I'm actually going to judge. I'm going to trust Mourinho in a one-off game like this, because I think he'll get it right and get United to the final.
Steve, do you agree with that? Do you think Mourinho's going to turn it round and overcome the odds, since Jan reckons that Spurs have an unfair advantage?
I think it's a knockout game, isn't it? So both teams have to win. I think with Mourinho, I think he'll attack the game very much like he did against Liverpool the other week, where he'll find a weakness in Spurs and he'll try and exploit that. And we'll just have to wait and see, because you know what he's like. If he does get a lead early, he's quite happy to set out to see the game out. So it depends how the games go in the next few weeks as well, because obviously if they lose a few more or they're not at it, then obviously it's very difficult. And obviously you're going to see what Spurs are made of in the coming weeks, because obviously they haven't got Kane as well, so they're going to be relying on others. So we'll see how long their form can continue as well.
Rod, we said that Romero was going to play. He did. Michel Vorm is Spurs' cup goalkeeper. Do you think that's going to make any difference at all to the result?
Not really. Like we talked about before, these are both, you know, world class keepers, but they're good Premiership backup keepers. And, you know, Romero didn't put a foot wrong last year, winning the Europa League, and Vorm's the same. He's a decent keeper as well. So I shouldn't think it'll make any difference, but I think I agree with Steve. It just depends on when he sets up and who he plays. But, you know, you need to start well. Because they don't seem to be long after moving from, because, you know, they've only been beat there once this season by Tottenham. I know Harry Kane will be missing, but, you know, it's a big game and it's a must-win game for both sides.
That's right. Salvage the season, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. So, Southampton's 2-0 win in Leslie Hughes' first game in charge earned the Saints a spot in the semi-final against Chelsea, who actually needed extra time and a howler from Kasper Schmeichel to beat Leicester. Steve, oddly enough, Mark Hughes said Southampton's win against Wigan was a statement of intent, which was quite an interesting statement, given we'd all like to know what Southampton's intentions are. Now, Unfortunately, Hughes then ruined the moment with a new manager bingo term. We have a lot of work to do now. To be fair, Wigan were actually all over Southampton in the first half, and I can't really see Southampton getting any loose change from Chelsea, let alone win. Do you think that semi-final will be as one-sided as I think it will?
No, not at all. It's a one-off game. So I think what Mark Hughes was getting at was the fact he's lined up in a different formation to what Pellegrini or Pellegrino, whatever his name is, had been setting up. He's been a lot more positive compared to what the other manager was like, who was very negative. I think that's what he was getting out of that. But obviously, there is a hell of a lot of work to do. He needs to get everyone singing off of his hymn sheet. And obviously, they need to get themselves safe, first and foremost. And if they do that and they win the next couple of games and then go into the semi-final, you could see a completely different Southampton team to what you've seen previously this season. And you look at the game that Chelsea just played at the weekend. It was, for me now, Chelsea just seem to be a top half team in the Premier League. And every time they go out there, it seems whoever they play gives them a very, very good game. So I think the same thing will happen again with Southampton in the semi-final. Mm.
There's something that's kind of not bothered me, but I'm intrigued about. Like Mark Hughes was an established footballer, a legend at Man United. No two ways about it. Did very well at Barcelona. Did very well for the world's national team as a footballer. Did well as a coach there. But as time's gone on, he's kind of regressed as a manager. But seeing him stepping at Southampton, what do you think that would do for the club? Will it give them a lift, saying that, oh, this guy is a legend? Or is it more like, well, you know, he's been a bit meh in his past couple of clubs. So what do you think his appointment will do for Southampton? Will it galvanise him?
Yeah, definitely. It's a fresh face, mm-hmm. New ideas. And effectively, he needs to stamp his authority on them as well. So he'll be full of energy. He'll be buzzing to get a good result. If he keeps them up, it could kickstart his managerial career again. He's had a few tough jobs. He was at Stoke for a while. He did all right at Stoke. He changed them from the team they were, which would have been hard work because they were used to doing what they did week in, week out. They're going to Southampton now. As I said, fresh ideas, new faces. A lot of the players won't know him, won't have worked with him before, so they'll be open to his ways. And hey, they all want to. Every single one of the players in that dressing room will want to stay in the Premier League, whether it's financial, whether it's for their status, whatever it is. They'll all want to. So if he brings a new idea to the table, then they're all going to buy into it at the minute. And I think for that reason, they're a decent bet to stay up now.
Mm. I think what you said is fair. The only thing I would possibly disagree with is what you said about him changing Stoke, because yeah, he's changed Stoke, but they've kind of gone backwards. Under Tony Pulis, they were, you know, rough around the edges, but they could handle a bit of a scrap, you know, whereas now...
Yeah, I just mean he's changed their style. He changed the style of play that they were playing to try different. And he's had success the last couple of years. It's only really this season where they've faltered, and he's paid the price for that. And you've seen Paul Lambert's got in there, who's a very, very good manager who I've worked with and I've really enjoyed working with. And he's won one out of the 5 or 6 games he's been in charge. He's got some decent results, but they're still struggling. They're still down there. So it's difficult, isn't it? Because you look at Newcastle, they've got Rafa Benitez, who's won Champions Leagues and all sorts. And sometimes you just have a bad season and you just hope it's not as bad as it is. And so look at West Brom. They've been an established team for a long time. And without a shadow of a doubt, they're not going to be in the league next year. So I think it's not fair sometimes to throw all the blame on the manager. He picks the teams. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But once they step over the white line, then the players have to start taking responsibility for their performances.
Mm-hmm. Steve, if I may digress or deviate a little bit, you mentioned Paul Lambert. You're not the first person to have actually said that Paul Lambert is a fantastic person to work with. I mean, Leon Knight was with him at Wickham, and he said he's absolutely fantastic. But for me, Paul Lambert kind of fits in the same category as Steve McClaren. Absolutely superb coaches, but when it comes to, you know, being the manager, for some reason they just can't get it to translate on the pitch, can they?
Yeah, well, I totally. He's not a coach at all. He's a manager. Mm. He well, my time with him, he doesn't do the coaching on the training ground.
Oh,
he
really?
Does the management.
Okay.
He had Ian Coulthouse with him when we was at Norwich, who did most of the coaching. Paul Lang was out there, yeah, don't get me wrong, and he was putting his information across. But yeah, he's not a training ground coach who's like that. He's more of a manager. He makes you feel on top of the world. He makes you feel like you want to play for him, you want to win for him. So yeah, no, he's not in that bracket at all.
Wow.
It's, well, the man that I know anyway, the coach, the manager that I worked with, is the complete opposite to the one that maybe people think he is. So
that's interesting.
He's definitely not in a Steve McCallum bracket. Definitely.
Oh, that's really interesting. That put me in my place. Right, I better move on before I dig my hole even bigger. Right, Jan, Gabbiadini, an Italy striker that doesn't seem to get a chance at national team level. Gabbiadini Carrillo started up front, and Gabbiadini had a great chance to put the Saints ahead in the second half, but he fluffed his lines. Now, he fell out of favour with Pellegrino, but I actually think he's got goals in him, and we'll have a big say in Southampton's survival plans. What do you make of him? Because I think he's perfect for the kind of style that Mark Hughes plays.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a good player. When Southampton first signed him, he started like a house on fire, didn't he? He was scoring goals, he was making goals. I mean, I remember he gave United a torrid time in the final as well. He scored a couple of goals as well. So he's a good player, Gabby. He's just suffered like everybody else at Southampton. Lack of confidence, a negative style where, Pellegrino was a defensive style manager that didn't suit Gabbiadini's kind of style of football. He was left out a lot to play Shane Long, who... Personally, I don't get the fact that Long only scored like one goal or two goals all season. Didn't make any sense for me. But I agree. I think Hughes would get the best out of him. He's got talent. He's got that individual brilliance where he can, you know, he's got a lovely left foot, so he can score a goal out of nothing. And he could be the key to keep Southampton up this season.
That's right. That's right. Rod, Leicester gifted Chelsea their second, then were hit with a swift counter-attack for the first. Now, Claude Puel must be very disappointed with the manner both goals were scored, mate.
Yeah, they definitely must have fancied themselves yesterday because, you know, at their stadium and Chelsea not firing on all cylinders, and, you know, Leicester with a tail up in the middle of a good result against West Brom last week, they would have fancied themselves. It's a giveaway to really relatively poor goals for their standards. You know, Schmeichel doesn't make much mistakes like that, so you can't really pick it on him. It's just a one-off, but yeah, it's one of the ruining, the one that really they could have at least that way took the penalty, but you know, Chelsea did what they did and got a goal later.
Oh yeah, that'll be an interesting semi-final, to be fair. Obviously, Mark Hughes has played for Chelsea as well, so that's got a little bit of a spite to it. Right, in other news...
Like Steve said, it's a one-off game, it's a semi-final, anything can happen.
Yeah.
I'm sure back in all them years ago, against when we played Manchester United were favourites and they ended up winning one else. So anything can happen, and it's the FA Cup, we've seen it all the years, upset, so who knows, you never know.
Absolutely. Okay, in other news... Mo Salah scored 4 in Liverpool's 5-0 win over Watford, leading to comparisons with Messi, of all people. Now, Steve, no doubt Salah deserves Player of the Year, but to say he's on the same level as Messi is ridiculous, isn't it, mate?
It is in a minute, but at the end of the day, you've got to start somewhere. Messi's on the level he is because he's done it year in, year out for however long he's been. It seems like he's been around forever now. Same as Ronaldo, what did he score, 4 or 5 the other night as well, Saturday night. So yeah, but he's got to start somewhere. At the minute, he is out of all of the attacking talent that Liverpool's got, he's the best by far. He's winning games on his own. I don't think anyone wants to play against him at the minute, and he's phenomenal. But yeah, he's showing traits. He's still young. If he's still doing it in 5-6 years when he hits 30, then we can start talking about him in those same brackets. But yeah, so that's the problem, isn't it? Everyone gets compared to people like Messi and Ronaldo, and then all of a sudden he'll have about 6 months and he won't be good enough anymore. So as I said, he's phenomenal at the minute, and I think he'll go on and win Golden Boot in the Premier League, and it'll be interesting to see how many more goals he gets, because I think he'll see 7 games to score a few more goals, so he'll score at least 10, something like that, won't he?
That's right.
I think next season will be interesting still. The fact that it's the second season where defenders will kind of be more prepared for it. So we'll see how he does next season.
But there's a World Cup as well, mate. So how much of a break is he going to get between the World Cup and pre-season?
Yeah, not a lot, is it? So,
no. But listen, hey, look, I'll be the first to admit, you know, we've slated Jurgen Klopp for his lack of defensive astuteness, so to speak. But going forward, he's got it, you know, bang on. And what he's done for Salah, you know, we said it a few weeks ago. Salah wasn't prolific in Serie A. He wasn't prolific at Chelsea. But he's come in here. He's a beast. He's an absolute beast. Absolutely. That's right. Okay, our mate and Rod's best mate, Mario Icardi, scored 4 for Inter in their 5-0 win at Sampdoria, while Juve were held 0-0 at Spal. When I first saw it, I thought it was at Spa, you know, the off-license back in the day. Jan, do you think Icardi should get on the plane to Russia? If you're Sampaoli, are you going to pick him? You can't leave him behind, can he?
He's got a ghost, though. 100%. You can't ignore a guy that is prolific year in, year out. He scores goals, Icardi. Maybe, I don't know if it's his personality or his attitude or he falls out with players too much, because there's a lot of negativity always surrounding Icardi with his kind of history off the pitch. But
he pissed off the Inter out ultras by writing something about him in his autobiography. I mean, it's not that he just upsets some people. He upset about 30,000. of his own,
and he took Maxi Lopez's wife, didn't he? So, you know.
Well, anyway, carry on.
So, anyway, but but you can't ignore a guy that scores goals. I mean, for me, he's got a guy. I mean, if you look at Argentina strikers at the moment, you got Aguero, Higuain, Messi. He's got to be the fourth one, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah, Dybala isn't really a striker, is he? More like a forward player. Yeah,
more like a number 10. So, but Messi plays there as well. It's interesting because they've got a lot of similar he's kind of similar striker in a sense. And Aguero as well. So, can you fit all five? Me personally, I'll take him, but maybe Aguero and Higuain are slightly ahead of him in the order.
Well, he's a good plan B or C to have, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it. Right, our next two stories come from Down Under and the A-League, a very interesting league that Jan has a vested interest in. Sydney FC's first home loss in 29 games came as a bit of a shock, but it was the actions of a midfielder, David Carney, that bemused players and fans. Now, Carney allegedly packed his bags and left the stadium at half-time after being substituted. Boss Graham Arnold clarified the whole situation, saying Carney took his bag to the car and came back inside to watch the second half. Boo, boring. Not to be overshadowed by the league leaders, Melbourne Victory had their own minor problems to deal with when play was stopped during their game on Sunday, because the side netting of one of the goals actually came apart. Now, cue Sunday league-esque patch jobs. Out came the gaffer tape, a few individuals discussing how the net should be taped up, and wait for it, a bunk up for someone to tape the top corner. Even the commentator was like, it's about time they've done it. It was actually ridiculous them thinking about getting a ladder. It was so scary. Gents, I can only remember Sol Campbell leaving at halftime after being substituted for Arsenal back in 2006 against West Ham. Now, have you guys actually ever heard of a player doing a runner at halftime? Steve, has that happened to any of your teams?
No, not that I can... Not that I can remember. Obviously, you have people. Normally, if you're taken off at half time, you don't go back out and watch the second half on the bench. You've got the right underwear, you're having a shower, and you might be sitting in the dressing room after, or you might not be, depending on the result, etc., etc. But I'm sure he's not the only person. I'm sure Sol Campbell's not the only person to have done it as well. I'm sure there's been plenty of cases up and down the country. And then when Monday morning comes along, normally the player regrets their actions because. It wasn't a professional, but people do odd things in the heat of the moment sometimes.
Mm. Yeah, and I remember when United played Charlton, when was it? 2004, I want to say. I think it was.
Is that when Van Nistelrooy went?
Precisely. Van Nistelrooy wasn't selected in the team. He wasn't even on the bench, so he just got in a cab and went home. I mean, that's the only other hissy thing I can think of. Can you think of any others?
No, not off the top of my head, but I know that. that happens. You know what I mean? People get frustrated and they don't want to. They want to show their frustrations, so they go home rather than saying something they shouldn't say or doing something they shouldn't do. So, it's frustrating.
I remember when Di Canio wanted to be substituted. I know it's a totally different one. I think he was denied two or three penalties in the game, and he was telling Harry Redknapp, "Just take me off, take me off. I don't want to play anymore."
Yeah, yeah, Paolo Di Canio. He's a great one, isn't he? Rod, do you know anyone? Have you heard of anyone?
No, never. I think it's probably happened. I'm a team fan, but you always regret if you do something daft like that. And, your teammates, family, manager, just all that business. But no, I've never heard of it really.
And what about the whole gaffer tape thing with the net? That was a bit of a comedy act, wasn't it? I don't know if you guys actually saw it. Did you see it, Steve?
No, I didn't see it. I've read about it. I didn't see it, though. But they need must, and they got it done. It's not something you might should be prepared for because it doesn't happen very often, does it? So,
not at all.
They got it sorted in the end.
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, correct me if I'm wrong. Did Berbatov leave the stadium in the Champions League final when he went selected for the squad?
What, in Rome?
Yeah, no, in Wembley. Against Barcelona.
Pass, I don't know.
No.
He
didn't, no?
He was there.
Oh, he was there, yeah, okay.
He was probably in the players' lounge smoking 20 fags. No. Yeah, or probably cussing David James in whichever way he was doing it. This whole thing with the tape, man. You know, you've seen it before. Half time, when the players come out for the second half, you've got the linesman or the assistant referees like messing about on the side netting. Surely they spotted that in the first place. I mean, I don't. I think didn't the ball go out for a goal kick? Then it clipped the side netting, and that's what did it.
That's what did it. Yeah, that's what triggered it. It's amateur stuff, to be honest.
Well, these things happen. These things happen.
Yeah, they do.
It's a no story, but we've killed 5 minutes, I guess, talking about it. Right, that's it for us this week. I don't have any other funny tales, fortunately or unfortunately. Jan, do you want to give everyone your Twitter, mate?
Yannick is Jay.
Excellent. Rod?
Rod James Giggs.
Is your brew cold? Or have you finished it?
Pardon?
Is your brew cold? Or you finished it?
I like my brews hot.
Great stuff. And Steve, thank you once again for coming on the show, mate. Really no appreciate problem. It. I know you're not a social media guy, but one day you'll join us, hopefully. In this,
No. I'll hang the phone off and I'll go into my little world now, and no one can find me.
It's like Paul Scholes, go in, do your job, and then go home. That's it.
No problem.
Fantastic, mate. Appreciate it. Well, guys, we're on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Feel free to follow us at Viva Red Army. We've got a new podcast come out. Rodri does it whenever we do the previews for certain games. Jan hasn't been invited because it's all rubbish. But we'll have it. Until next time, guys, take it easy.